Phew.
Hey, Fiona, appealing to your demographic again?
Well, yes, if you mean all rugged men aged 18 to 99, women who like horror, LGBT sci-fi listeners, comedy writers, the young, the old, the... Yeah, I suppose.
Cool. I think they ripped your coat there.
See. It was worth it. Still, is that your demographic over there?
Yep.
Just Austin, then?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Austin.
Hey, Fiona.
It's Sarah, actually.
Don't be ridiculous. Sarah's an American.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast.
I'm Fiona.
And I'm Sarah.
And today we're looking at who is your target audience.
And how much do you interact with your demographic? Do you know who they are? Do you offer them exciting merchandise? Or what do you think you should be doing to entice them to come back for more? Mm.
So we were having a look at some figures, weren't we? Mm. And clearly the numbers of audio drama listeners are increasing massively year on year.
Hooray.
Yay. According to the figures, podcast listening grew 23% between 2015 and 2016, which is amazing.
That's pretty much what I do over Christmas, I think, similarly.
Yes.
At least 23%. But you know, that is fantastic though, isn't it? And yeah, the market does seem a lot more exciting and diverse. Mm. I mean, a diversity is obviously a whole 10-season podcast discussion. But but regards to demographics of people, I wonder who it is that's now caught on to, you know, how awesome this genre of entertainment is.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, definitely with the genre that you choose to go into, you're going to be appealing to a certain slice of that demographic, aren't you? Mm. And with some, obviously, you're going to be limiting your listeners naturally, and with others, embracing more listeners. Mm. But I guess, you know, it depends on what you yourself are inspired to do and what are you drawn to do.
Absolutely. No, I think there's a lot of fascinating. I mean, my listening podcast range is massive, really. I think I've got some, should I say hardcore horror? That makes it sound crude. But no, I've got some wonderful horror podcasts, as well as, you know, light entertainment and quite whimsical, fun, real life based on real characters type thing. So yeah, I think there's such a range available, isn't there, currently, with multicasts and single narrators and male narrators film. I mean, there's so many different amazing arrays of types to get stuck into.
Exactly. Because unlike you, I'm a bit of a wuss when it comes to horror. Bizarrely, especially in audio. For example, I actually like old-fashioned kind of horror, like M.R. James.
Yeah.
And I've read his books, and I've seen some of the TV versions of some of his stuff. And my husband actually bought me an audio drama of one of his stories, and I could not listen to it. Mm. I was so scared, even though I knew the story. I knew what was going to happen. I knew, you know, it was all within boundaries. But I think audio can be so visceral.
Oh, absolutely. So
if you are doing something that is horror, well, I suppose immediately you're taking away family listeners, so you're not...
Hopefully
you're not going to be having any sort of 12-year-olds listening. But there is a great love of horror, and it can be done amazingly well in the medium of audio.
Yeah, and now with the sort of the binary and kind of multiverse around you kind of recordings as well that are being done. I don't know if you've listened to any of those, but there's some amazing things being done currently that, you know, you are completely immersed in all around you. And it's kind of like, you know, what VR is trying to replicate visually orally has been happening for a little while, which is amazing. So audiences wise, I guess we were talking that, you know, with horror, yes, we're looking at over 18 market. And so on. But yeah, with your shows in particular, it would be interesting to find out, do you know who your demographic is, and how much do you market yourselves to them specifically? What exactly do you do? How would you inspire others who've got similar product? How would you encourage them to draw in their listeners and keep them because of how you're marketing it specifically to them? And we were talking as well about merchandise, weren't we, that some particularly successful groups are now kind of going on to have stuff you can get hold of. I can't wait to get stickers and bookmarks. And I've got my Found t-shirt I got the other day, which is very exciting.
Oh, fantastic.
So, yeah, so there's all these fun things coming along that you can, you know, have a, be a part of and kind of have stuff.
With really good audio dramas, they are something that you really identify with, you know, and it is great when they do bring out a t-shirt or something and or a mug and you can sort of hold it up and, oh, yes, I'm one of those people that found this podcast because it's dead cool or it's, you know, just something to connect, I guess, with other people, isn't it? You know, you see someone wearing a particular badge or something and you know, ah, this is someone, you know, we have something in common with.
My kin, you know? Yes.
The only thing, the drawback that I've found with t-shirts, I once ordered one years ago from America, from a podcast there.
Yeah.
But I didn't realise that there's an import duty on t-shirts and the import duty was actually more expensive than the actual t-shirt.
No.
So it ended up being like, well, the most expensive t-shirt I've ever bought, even though the actual t-shirt was normal t-shirt kind of price.
A week's worth of your regular champagne, yes.
Exactly. Well, this is it. Yeah, the champagne budget just went out the window. But I think it is a very good way of making your listenership kind of feeling part of a tribe, you know, part of a fan base.
Yeah, and we've seen quite a few people who, at the end of podcasts, say, like, thanks for listening, and obviously list characters and so on involved, and then have a short spiel about, like, just please leave us a review, because that's how other people find out about you, I guess, is one of the main things, that like-for-like people would be encouraged to listen to something because of reviews. I mean, my husband doesn't buy anything unless he's read, you know, several reviews, and if it's got not enough reviews, he doesn't trust it. So I think it's similarly with podcasts. I think some people won't give things a go they don't know unless perhaps they've had that recommendation from someone else. I don't know, people seem to be adverse to leaving any kind of review.
I think with iTunes, sometimes it's not ever so user-friendly for people who aren't completely au fait with iTunes. Speaking for myself, there, I have tried to leave a review and have found it to be a few more steps than I thought it would take. But I mean, it's a wonderful hub of all new modern audio podcasts, but yeah, it's not quite as easy to leave as it might be. But you're right, people don't. I wonder, is it because when you watch a TV programme or something, you don't naturally immediately pick up your pen and, oh, I've got to write a letter to the producer of that. That was amazing, you know. And I guess we're kind of used to that, you know, entertainment just kind of being there and you really love it and it goes and it's great and here's the next one. It's a different culture, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a mindset that I think we should try and encourage more folks to get into, to spread the word maybe. But and I think there are other platforms as well where, you know, through Facebook and Twitter and so on, I think like the hashtag Audio Drama Sunday, I often just browse through that and you know, find new things to listen to through things like that on Twitter. And I think it's quite interesting, really, you know, the range of things that have very recently, even like in the last few months, have popped into my view because of using all these different marketing places to be seen, to be visual to people who use social media and beyond. Yeah, and I think with various Facebook groups, it's quite interesting as far as, you know, auditioning for things and finding out, you know, who's doing what and where and what's coming up at some point. I think what's exciting for me is how people build up that excitement, that hype of something's coming. I think there's a few writers that I've scene who basically is saying, like, you know, I've started to write this, I'm aiming to do this by January and this by this date. And so you're kind of building up already an expectation of how exciting this potentially might be. And I wonder, yeah, what kind of interaction those people get back from, you know, social media people who are perhaps just lurking and reading and getting excited but not actually interacting. And I mean, how would you actively get somebody to feedback? What strategies do people have to help that producer, writer, actors, whatever, just to get something back to help you know that you know you're on the right track?
It's that million-dollar question, isn't it? It's you know, you look at some of my very favourite shows, and I go and look, and they'll have, you know, 10 reviews if they're really successful, you know, and so it's just one of those. Things. And then, of course, one of those reviews at some point will be a one-star review with just sort of like two words attached to it or something.
Yeah.
And there'll be also the five-star reviews that you're not quite sure if it's, you know.
Yes.
So it's hard to know. But then when you do find ones that are well-written, like you say, it really helps you to get into a new podcast or a new series, you know. It only takes a few sentences, you know, oh, this is a really deep and interesting story that's got some dark bits and it's very exciting, edge of your seat stuff. And, you know, you read something like that from another listener and you think, OK, I've got to give this a go.
Yeah. I think there's a tendency now as well for more successful shows to do live shows, isn't there, as well? So obviously there you're completely face to face with people who have otherwise been faceless and just your listeners, who then, you know, bother to come and either perhaps even pay money to buy a ticket to come or come for free, whatever is arranged, and then you can have that interactivity. And I think that's fantastic. I mean, I've been in various places, like, you know, cinemas and community halls, and thought, wouldn't it be fabulous to just do a live recording of something here in this beautiful space and get people along to enjoy the audio versions of whatever is being worked on at the time, I think.
Oh, exactly the same. It's a real ambition, actually. I really want to do that one day. I think it would be just amazing.
For sure. Have that face-to-face. And as I say, then you will truly know who your demographic is, because you can stare them in the face.
You can watch the bit that isn't walk out in front of your very eyes.
Yes, or just to the bar. Yeah. But I think that's what's exciting, is that I think people who I have met who... as an audio fan as well, you know, I just think that they're so opening and welcoming to you know, your thoughts on what they're doing. And I think that's a really open and honest and wonderful thing.
Very much so, yeah. Kessie got something together, didn't she, where she was encouraging people to leave reviews. And I think, yeah, it is such a nice thing to do, because the people who make audio, I'm sure they would welcome that kind of feedback.
Oh, absolutely certain.
If it was constructive, you know, criticism, and, you know, you should be doing more of this.
Anything. Feedback, dude. Then things can be done good, done better. Yeah, no, I just think it's really key to developing. You know, if you get some feedback from someone, it can, you know, springboard a whole lot of our exciting adventures.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think you should promise us that you will go and review at least one thing in the next 7 days.
That's,
because you've listened now, that's the thing.
It's the homework.
Well, no, don't do homework. But yeah, I just think that'd be lovely.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a few people we managed to speak to on this matter, and let's hear what they had to say.
Here's a great contribution from Lauren Nelson of The Box.
Hey everyone, I'm Lauren Nelson, creator of the audio drama horror series The Box and creator of the upcoming short-run audio drama series 2 Minutes to Midnight. Like many of you, I love audio drama. It's a fantastic creative outlet, and the medium is so flexible. There's also a really low barrier to entry, which means we get a whole bunch of distinctive voices telling diverse stories, and that's always a win. Plus, there's never been a better time to get into the space. People cannot get enough of good audio drama podcasts. All of this is fine and well, but the combination of these factors, especially paired with the explosion and the number of audio dramas being produced, makes one component of the mix more important than it might have been in the past: marketing and branding. If you're like me, you might have just thrown up in your mouth a little bit, and that's coming from someone who's been in marketing for the better part of a decade. When you're creating an audio drama, there's a lot of creative love that goes into it, from the scripting to the recording to the production process. And by the time it's all done, you just want people to love on it. You don't want to have to put in the time and energy to promote it. But in reality, with so much competition out there, it's necessary for you to have a strong understanding of who you are as a brand, who you're trying to reach, and how you want to get there. But you don't have to be a marketing professional to answer these sorts of questions and get a plan together. When it comes to developing a brand, most of you have already answered the questions related to defining a brand. You did this when you set up the framework for your show, when you defined the world it was in, the characters that populated it, their identities, and how they operated. And in many ways, you can probably already answer the audience question. You are looking to reach people who enjoy stories that align with the genre you're operating in and listen to podcasts. But especially for established shows, taking some time to better understand the demographics of your audience can help you do one of two things. Either you can understand who's listening and make sure the story is crafted in a way that has them coming back for more, or you can recognize that maybe you're not bringing in the audience that you had hoped and perhaps switch tracks a little bit. You also want to think about how you're reaching people, because this can have a direct impact on the demographics of your audience. Engaging your personal networks is always the first step. Engaging in different Facebook groups that are dedicated to podcasts is a good second step. Creating your own Facebook page where audience listeners can engage directly with the show is a great way to make sure that not only are you gaining more listeners, but you're gaining evangelists who are going to bring other people to the show. Twitter is another great way to reach a larger audience. Many of you already participate in Audio Drama Sunday, tweeting out the handles of shows that you think are great and promoting your latest stuff. If you're not doing that, you should. One of the best parts about the audio drama community is that we are so incredibly supportive of one another, and social media is a fantastic way to keep that trend going. Now, answering all these questions is crucial to really understanding your brand and what direction you want it to go in, but it also plays into another element of podcasting that we don't always want to talk about, and that's monetization. For a lot of us, we got into this because it was fun, it was a hobby, but it's also a very expensive hobby, and as time goes on, it's totally reasonable to want to find a way to generate some income off of it. There are different ways of doing this. You can have a Patreon account where your listeners donate to support the show's ongoing efforts. You can secure sponsors, including ads before, during, and after your episodes, to gain a little extra cash. There's also merchandising, things like stickers, t-shirts, mugs. If you really want to go out of the box, you can sell artwork or even books. But at that point, you go from creating to selling. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. But if you haven't put the time into really understanding your brand and its direction, trying to sell it becomes a lot more difficult. Even with Patreon, you are asking people to trust you enough to give you their money. Trust you that you are going to continue to create awesome shows. And trust is built with consistency over time. The best way to ensure that consistency is to make sure you have an idea of the brand from the get-go, and you stick to that idea as time goes on, evolving where necessary, but staying true to what you were trying to do in the first place. In fairness, when you're dealing with sponsors, they're going to be primarily focused on the numbers. How many downloads, over what period of time, at what rate of growth? And that's pretty reasonable. But as more and more podcasts begin to compete for those sponsorship dollars, they're going to start looking at other elements of the show as well, namely the brand. Can the show be relied upon to consistently create great content? Does that content align with the brand's values? Does it make sense to use this show and their creative work to reach the audience in question? There are some people who already do a really good job of this. The extreme example here is the No Sleep podcast. They do a fantastic job of including ads in a brand-consistent fashion. Instead of a random ad spot, the ad comes off as yet another story on the show, admittedly with a bit more humor. And the strategy has been so successful that even subscribers who don't get the ads in their feed actively seek out the ad spots on the No Sleep website. Another good example of a more conventional approach is found in John Grill's Small Town Horror. If you haven't listened, which you should, the protagonist is a bit of a boozer. So it made all the sense in the world when he started talking about wine of the month clubs. Of course he would do something like that. He doesn't want to have to leave his hotel room to go get some booze. In other words, branding cuts two ways when it comes to sponsorships. It tells would-be sponsors that you're reliable, and it helps you create more effective ads that keep the sponsors coming back. Finally, there's merchandising. This is where branding plays a huge role. For a lot of us, the bulk of the visual work we've done for our show relates to cover art. Maybe, on occasion, the development of a supplementary website. But with merchandise, especially the most successful examples, album art is only going to get you so far. You need to be able to get more creative and draw from popular parts of your story to create other items that will generate excitement. And you need to do that in a visual way that's consistent with the album art your listeners already identify you with. A show that's done a really good job of this is The Black Tapes. They were one of the first audio drama horror series I fell in love with. So, of course, my sister, for Christmas, got me a shirt that said, "I survived the Unsound." If you haven't listened to the show, that means nothing. But if you've listened to every episode several times like I have, that means everything. It also helped that the design of the t-shirt was really consistent with the current album art for The Black Tapes. The entire experience of getting and wearing that shirt brought up memories of listening to the show, and that's what good merchandise should do. The reason it worked is because that merchandise was entirely brand consistent. So yeah, I know. Marketing and branding, after you've put all that work and love and sweat and blood and tears into creating your audio drama, may sound like the last thing you want to do. But in the end, not only will paying attention to marketing and branding help improve the quality of your show, it might just make it profitable in the end. That's all for today. Talk soon.
So we welcome now Rich Wentworth and Mike McQuilkin on This Timeline, anyway, talking to you about how to market your show and having a think about your demographic.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
It's Rich and Mike from
Mike
Hadron
and Rich
Gospel
here.
Hour. Mike and Rich also. And we're here to talk to you about marketing and how we go about it.
Rich, let me start this off with a question to you. Are we the right people to be talking about marketing?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I don't think so. But
do you think we'll discover something about that as we answer these questions?
I think we're going to learn a lot, and I.
All right.
So,
well, then I'm in.
We're going to break it down. We're going to break down our barriers, our boundaries, and our defenses. We're going to open up.
And we're going to leave. So, we're going to be left with nothing but pure information.
Right. Yeah. Pure emotion, pure truth.
I second that pure emotion.
All right. So the first question is, how do you know your demographic? And I have to say that as folks who do podcasting, who have been involved in that process will know, demographic information is very hard to come by in podcasting through the engines that we distribute. We use Blueberry, but the same is true with Libsyn. There's only so far you can drill down into the information to find out who is exactly downloading and listening to your show that way.
Right.
So that is kind of... that's a tricky one. What we have done is used basically social media and the email newsletter and direct communication from fans to find out who they are. And
we call sort of a rudimentary understanding of where they are in the demographic ranges. But again, it's like it's not a perfect science.
It's not.
Yeah. You're never getting enough information with that stuff.
No, and I think the best way that I would suggest to do that or to get demographic information is to, you're going to have to ask your fans to make themselves known to you, ask your listeners to make themselves known to you. And that's what we do with the show through the social media platforms, is try to encourage folks to reach out to us, let us know that they're listening, let us know what they're enjoying, what they'd like to hear more of, and through that, and sometimes incentivizing it with giveaways or contests and things like that. And even then, you're not going to really know everybody who's listening, because not everybody who's listening is going to want to participate in that kind of thing. But you do get an idea. And I would say our demographic is fairly wide-ranging. They are folks who, enjoy smart comedy, right, Mike? Would you say
I would categorize it as that. Yes. And
yeah.
And the age range seems pretty large. There's a lot. You know, there's some really
wide age range. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Folks of all gender who listen, and backgrounds, creeds, nationalities, etc. We do get feedback from all over the English speaking world, and even some folks who
South America,
folks whose first language is not English, which is fantastic.
Right.
One thing that it seems that we're missing, the category that we really can't seem to break into, is the folks who enjoy listening to shows but don't like to hear overlapping dialogue and quickly paced scenes. That seems like a group that we just can't seem to crack into, and I don't know that we ever will. Mike, do you have any thoughts on?
I feel like I'm looking at them through the rear view mirror at this point, but
yeah,
I'm happy to stop the car and let them in, but we haven't gotten.
Would you do that? Might not be.
I don't know. I mean, look at all this luggage we have in the back seat. I mean, it's not going to be comfortable.
No.
But
no, they're going to have to lay on top of some gear.
Right.
And like there's probably a hip, you know, like something.
Well, we're going to have to stop more too. I mean, you know, bathroom breaks and stuff now. But
So hypothetically, right? Let's say that I want to stop and pick up one of these folks. I want to, you know, widen the demographic that way.
Okay. Well, what's your signal going to be for that?
I don't know. I'm on the highway. We're going a fairly good clip. So I, you know.
Now, see, this sounds dangerous to me. Now, I know. Look, I understand.
I'm within the limits.
There's a certain point where, look, we said we were leaving and now we're on the highway and now they're indicating to us. It's like, well, maybe we'll jump on board.
I think it's dangerous. So I'm not sure if I should try to.
Right.
You know what? I'm going to try. I'm going to pull over.
Okay.
I'm going to pull over.
Okay, roll. Oh, no, I'll roll. Okay. Okay, that's a natural 20.
Oh, all right. So successful. I've used the blinker. The shoulder.
Yeah. A state goes by, waves.
Fantastic.
I'm assuming a greeting.
Like a thumbs up kind of thing?
Sure. Yeah.
And a statey, for those who are not from our area, is a state policeman
or
police person. Yeah. So that's awesome because they're usually, they're wonderful. They do a great job. But
so I hate to tell you this, but even though you successfully rolled, the X factor demographic of people who don't like overlapping dialogue, they're nowhere to be seen. So again, we can't trace them. We don't know how to get them on board, and we should.
Was I
just
going too
along.
Fast? Was
I? You, I think you need to stop blaming yourself. You really tried hard on this. I know how hard you tried on this, and
all right,
it's not your fault.
Okay,
no,
I'm going to merge back
it's
on.
Not, it's not
to
your
the,
fault. Look at me.
I appreciate that.
It's not your fault.
I would say we have a lot of interaction with our fans. Certainly more than we've had for anything else that we've ever done.
Including school, and high school.
Including school or family.
That's a dark turn.
The platforms, we, you know, as I said before, we use Facebook, we use Twitter,
Tumblr,
Instagram. Instagram is mostly pictures of arcade games and pinball
as
games,
it should be,
which I kind of like that it's that. And so we have a whole different fan base on Instagram, vintage arcade game lovers. We have Tumblr. We're not incredibly active on, we're in our 40s and that ship may have sailed for us in terms of being able to really effectively be young.
Right.
But Facebook and Twitter are fairly active for us. So we have pretty great listener response on both and great interactions on both. those are the major platforms for us.
Yeah, I'd agree. And the ones we've had the most success with engagement and feedback.
Right.
That, you know, solicited or not, people just reach out to us knowing that we have a presence on there, and they've been great.
Yeah, and we've been doing this now. We're going into our third year, right? Is that right, Mike?
Oh, boy. I don't know. Yes.
Yeah, right? Something like that. And so we've had a while to build up that that base. And you know, we haven't really... We did... this ties into marketing a little bit. We did a few events and things that were higher profile that really helped us, like the Geeky Awards. We submitted to the Geeky Awards. We've submitted to the Parsecs, and we've had some successes at both of those, and that's helped, I think, in terms of getting us a little bit of boost in terms of how many fans that we have, how many listeners we have, and how many folks, subscribers, things like that. We haven't really had the kind of magic retweet or someone who's kind of really excited about our show who has, like, just a bazillion followers and, like, really lights that flame. I think that is kind of something you can maybe actively court. We haven't really done a lot of that. You know, for us, like, our big idea of, like, celebrity guest stars or someone to pass our information along to is you know, someone like Christine McGlade or John Michael Thor, you know, people that we really are completely enamored with but may not be the kinds of folks who will start a revolution if they retweet us. And that's fine.
Our main purpose of courting them was to get them on the show.
Because it was like a bucket list thing to work with those people. So there's that. And, you know, I think if we were to really sort of focus on that, I would say maybe go after, not even for guests on the show, but just to, you know, sort of start tweeting at people or, you know, messaging them and saying, hey, you know, Will Wheaton or whatever, you like stuff.
Right.
And we do things.
This seems right up your alley.
A
recent metaphorical reference.
Right. And I think if you look at a lot of podcasts in general, not just audio drama podcasts, but you see a lot of action happening when somebody in that vein says, oh, hey, guys, check this thing out. And then, you know, things automatically change.
Your Nerdist.com, Earwolf.com, your,
if you will.
And all those people, that have their own embedded sort of network.
Yeah.
And are also putting stuff out there. So,
another great thing that's happened is just the community around audio drama starting, the Audio Drama Sunday hashtag and things like that. Those have really helped, I think, to create a kind of a momentum within the genre.
Yeah, a little boost every time, right?
Yeah, it's nice.
That's fun.
Right, but our growth overall has been very steady, and it's happened over time. We haven't had that kind of like mega spike that high profile fan would give to us. And again, that's fine because we're just kind of cranking along.
And as we understand it, like Welcome to Nightfall and all that, one of the gold standards of podcast becoming popular. At least their story is they were steady for a while, and then all of a sudden, one weekend they had a million downloads. It was just a spike, and they said it was a bunch of things happening at the same time, a bunch of people tweeting at the same time, those more connected, sort of tentpole Twitter people, tweeting at the same time, and you know,
a
lot of it's timing.
So they got right. A lot of it is timing, and a lot of it is kind of that like zeitgeist, right?
Right.
Like the zeitgeist of that style of show is happening. We're in the middle of it right now. So shows that have that kind of flavor are really doing well. Shows that have the kind of flavor that we have, I mean, we are kind of, there's a few shows that are happening now that are in the neighborhood of what we do, but what we're doing is very weirdly specific, and there really isn't a zeitgeist that we can tap into outside of the broader sense of, you know, audio dramas becoming more of something that people know about. What we do is a, you know, it's a mix of comedy and drama. It's very silly. It can also be very profound, and it changes on a dime. And so in a way, it makes it tough to tap into a larger thing. I've always felt since we started this, and I think Mike, you probably agree, is, you know, this is something that we have to kind of lean in and generate the buzz or the work that attracts the buzz ourselves.
Yeah.
And while we can benefit from connecting with other shows and, you know, marketing alongside other shows, the uniqueness of what we do really kind of puts us in an odd, special. I like the position, but it's definitely a different kind of spot than say a show that, and there's some great shows doing it, shows that kind of have that single narrator or, you know, very small cast and minimal bells and whistles.
I think it would, yeah, I think it's more difficult to describe and promote a show like this if you're not as directly involved with it as we are, like you said. So it's really, like you said, it's up to us to sort of try to encapsulate it as quickly as possible in some sort of blurb here and there. But the tone of the show kind of has to leak through every little missive, every little description.
Yeah. And we, you know...
That's hard to... I guess what I'm saying is that's kind of hard to communicate. So if we were going to have a marketing people or a bunch of people that were going to start street teaming it on the internet highways there, I don't know if, you know, we'd have to sit down and really talk about how we would want that.
This is part of the reason why I think you and I have been responsible for, you know, every area of the show from the writing and production of it to the marketing. Mm-hmm. And social media and things along those lines is that I think it's very difficult for us to, because the show is so deeply us and so deeply what we do, it's difficult for anybody else to really kind of express that fully. Yeah. For us. Although I have to say, one of the great benefits of all the communications that we have with our listeners is that I have heard some really great synopses or
yes,
one word,
that's true.
Like elevator yeah. pitches from our listeners.
And dream reviews from David Reinstrom, one of my favorite reviews of anything I've ever been involved
yeah.
with. Just a great, great review. You know, way back when. And it's been and it's continually been a great advocate for us and for the show.
Yeah, when David you know, reached out, I like that felt really good.
Yeah.
Because you know, he knows his stuff and has mm-hmm. listened to a lot of things, and for him to be happy about it was terrific. Yeah, and that right. he got it so well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of benefit to having the iTunes reviews and other ways that people can give feedback, like Facebook, and that they can comment on the page or whatever.
We could jump ahead to that next. So iTunes, do you have reviews? How do you encourage
Yeah,
folks to
let's
do
talk
them?
About that.
Yeah.
So we do have iTunes reviews, and the way that we have gotten them is to ask folks within our show liners. So you know, at the end of an episode we will ask for folks to rate and review us mm-hmm. on iTunes. And in fact, a couple times I believe we've actually incorporated that into the show, right? Is that
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Commander Funk has asked people to right. do that while he was narrating, I believe.
Right. He seems like the type of guy to do that.
Yeah.
And that's fine. So it fit well with him. But we've also put it on Facebook. We've put it on posts when we say, hey, there's a new episode up. Or the follow-up, we remind people that there's a new episode up. Hey, while you're at it, you know, don't forget to subscribe and also rate and review on iTunes.
Here's the thing. I think – oh, well, go ahead.
Well, iTunes, unfortunately, is really it's the only place kind of online that has an organized sort of like review system
that people pay attention
that people
to.
Pay attention to, yeah.
Right? And the thing is, in our ask, we basically are no pressure
right.
or very low pressure, and I think that's the key. I think you don't want to come across as though you're either desperate or angry or, you know, upset that you haven't gotten as many reviews as you want. None of us have gotten as many reviews as we want and or need.
Right.
You'll always want more. And that goes for someone with 4 reviews. It goes for someone with 400 reviews. And on days that you don't feel great, on days that you're not happy about what you're doing or you're doubting it, it can be very easy to be angry and or desperate or sad or whatever, and to let that leak in to a post or an entreaty to folks. And I think that is something that we try very hard to avoid, because I think it's off-putting, and I think it undermines the relationship that you want to put forth.
And in those weaker moments, you can always find comparative data online that is going to quickly bum you out. Like, if you're ready to be bummed out about comparing your show or your
absolutely
something else, like
that's just, no matter where you are, right. No matter where you are, right. in the hierarchy or spectrum. I mean, there really is no hierarchy, no. Because it's you know,
it is not a meritocracy. There's no pyramid out there where one particular podcast or art form or show is on top. It's just
finding your listeners, and the listeners that are going to like your show. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, that's a great point, Mike. And I think that's really reassuring, hopefully, for other folks who are out there doing this, because, you know, both you and I can get down. Both you and I can be on top of the world. You know, a lot of that is just the human, you know, the human mind and the human brain and our chemical nature and things along those lines. So someday you look at the downloads and you say, we're not going as fast or as far as we want to, mm-hmm. or geez, you know, look at these guys. These guys are blowing up, you know?
Yeah.
And that can get you down. But the reality is that there's going to be a lot of folks who just love audio dramas and will go around and listen to all of them, and that's great. And if they don't like yours, then that's, you know, that's too bad. But this is such a new world, yeah. And a new medium that I think there's some overlap between listeners of different shows, but I think everybody has to kind of, at this point, kind of carve out their own listenership, and you know, our listenership may not be the same as in other shows, and that's okay. Not everybody's going to like or listen to everything else. So it really is about, have you connected with your listeners, mm-hmm. with your people? And if you haven't yet, then, you know, that may be the reason why those numbers aren't looking so hot. But they're there. Yeah. They're out there, you know, and it really just becomes about, okay, so how do we connect with them?
I'm going to raise our profile.
And to be honest with you, I do think that some of that is out of your control. Some of it is going to be random. That one crazy superstar that says, oh, geez, you guys all have to hear this.
Right.
That one signal boost, that one, I don't know, news story on what you do or whatever, you know, whatever it is.
That one Colbert performance.
Right. You know, just and if you're lacking that, there might not be, you know, it might be that you may never connect with that. That is a realistic assessment of this.
But also keep in mind that this stuff, once you have it online, once you have these things packaged and you release them into the world, it's out there. And it's going to stay out there. And you have to you have to trust that if you have one or two people that really love your show and you get a great review, and we have plenty of great reviews, of like really nuanced reviews about specific things I love about the show, and just like over the moon, like that stuff that makes my day every single time I read it. But you know, even if that's just 5 or 6 or 10 reviews, you have to trust that if this is exposed to more people, you're going to get just as much love from
now
other people.
That may happen.
Right.
After you have wrapped up shop and said, screw this, I'm not doing this show anymore. And then years later, someone may say, oh, hey, you know, I'm going to write, you know, an article on, you know, the AV Club about this lost treasure or whatnot, you know. So I think, to me, it all comes back to, do you like doing this?
Right.
Is this something that you enjoy doing? Right. Because if it isn't, then you're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
You, this, nobody's nobody is going to get rich off of this. Certainly not if it's just something that you're doing because you see a lot of buzz around it. Yeah. It really has to be something you love doing. And if it's something you love doing, always direct yourself back to the work. Always direct yourself back to the actual craft, mm-hmm. and try to make the best thing that you can, because that is, you know, you can pull everybody in to listen to it. You can be the best marketer in the world. If you don't have a good product, if you don't have a good story, if you don't have a good production, mm-hmm. That doesn't matter.
Do it because you love it. Yeah. Don't do it because, you know, you want 100,000 people to tell you how much they love it. You know, that'd be great if that happens. But certainly don't let that be the main goal. Because there's a lot of stuff out there, but the cream still rises to the top. Podcasting is still a very young technology, and it's not a push button thing yet. You know, you don't have a button in your car where you can just hit podcast and it's going to go. It's going to go right there eventually, but people are still just finding it. So you have to trust that people are going to find. If the work
and if
is
you
want to
put yourself. Right.
People,
yeah, if you
want to
put yourself in the best spot to capitalize on whenever this thing really cracks open, mm-hmm. Marketing is not the way to do it.
Yeah.
Making your show the best show it can be is the way to do it. Mm-hmm. If you are a new show, if you're a new audio drama producer and you're just starting out and you're worried about marketing, forget it.
Yeah.
It's the last thing you should really be worried about. You're not trying to get to an imaginary pile on top of an imaginary pile so that you can break through when this thing goes nuts, because that's not the way this works. The way this works is good shows are going to get recognition, and good shows are going to make that leap when the time comes. Mm-hmm. You know, there's already some really successful shows that are doing well. As far as overall, this is an untried, untested form. But people will notice, and you'll get the recognition you want if you do the work, if you have something unique and special and entertaining to offer. Mm-hmm.
So quit wasting everybody else's time. No, that's not. Is that what you're
saying? No. Wait, and what about?
I'm sorry. When we are doing Good Cop, Bad Cop, or not? We're not. Jerk.
And yeah. So what about fanfic? You said, Mike. What was that?
Fanfic?
No, I'm joking.
Don't get me started.
I know. So that's...
Shipping, that's fine. Go for it. That's just another form of engagement.
Yeah.
Right?
And fan service. We are all about fan service.
Yep. Send us your pictures.
Okay. Well, that was a lovely discussion.
I think we discovered just as much about ourselves as the listener probably did, or maybe not.
If you have more questions, feel free to join us over at our Twitter account at HGH Show? Hadron Gospel.
Hadron Gospel.
Yeah. And at our Facebook page, which you can just search on Facebook for Hadron Gospel Hour.
Thank you ever so much to our contributors, Lauren Nelson, Mike McQuilkin, and Rich Wentworth.
Yes.
It was interesting what they were talking about there, about social media, wasn't it? Because we've been talking quite a bit about that.
So important, isn't it, to just, utilise all these amazing places of connectivity and communication, yeah? I mean, they specifically also talked about there's a different age range of people that are drawn to these different social interaction sites, aren't
yes.
they? So I think Lauren Shippen of the Bright Sessions, she mentions on Slack. I don't know if you've used much of Slack before. It's something that I've come across very recently.
I'm ever so new to it, yeah. I'm sure it's for young, fun, on-trend people.
I'm 22 inside.
Oh, goodness, and outside, of course.
Maybe my elbow. Because, Lauren said a specific thing, didn't she? I don't know do you want to put your best Lauren Shippen voice on, Fiona, and give us the...
I've got a quote.
Do it.
The number of people I have seen on Tumblr start listening because they saw a fan-made mood board is much larger than I expected. And then those people get their friends involved, and it's like a beautiful pyramid scheme of podcast sharing. which I think is so well written. That's really nice.
Isn't that fabulous way of putting it?
And it's absolutely right, because you've got those listeners out there who, apart from you, care as much, if not more, well, yeah. hopefully yeah. as much as you
well,
do.
The amount of times I've seen, yeah, people do the all sorts of fan-based artwork yeah. and some really amazing pictures of, you know, imagined characters and landscapes and all sorts. And obviously the talent as well of the producer makers themselves to put out their interpretation of characters and things. I think the sharing of that is just fantastic. It makes you want to see more.
Yeah, well, you were mentioning the wooden overcoats ones, weren't you, which are just spectacular. And it really gets people excited and interested and sharing. And the fans, the listeners, are actually doing some of that work for you.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the whole point. Mm. I really do think that, you know, we do need to look at and share and community envelop everybody who, you know, is potentially going to be able to share this work to their other friends and family and so on who can, you know, make this become an even more global, amazing society.
Definitely, definitely. And in fact, Mike and Rich mentioned elevator pitches by listeners as well. So it's not just, visual things, but they can actually distill down what for them is the most vital and exciting, what gets them listening to your show. Yeah, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And it's also how much you bother to contact as well, like sending out press releases and other information about your new episode or a new exciting season. And I think it's Jeff Adams of Icebox Radio Theatre, which is great fun. You should listen to that one. He recommends MailChimp. I don't know if you've come across using that.
Yeah, I haven't personally. I've not actually done automated press releases, but it's a great idea. And I imagine it would save you a lot of time. And in fact, Dan Manning of Greater Boston also recommends automation, and he uses Hootsuite. Which again, whichever you find best for you. But yeah, do check them out.
Exciting. Mm. Have an explore. Mm. So Felix Trench on the wooden overcoats, he also he's kind of against the idea of making artistic decisions based on who's listening, because you're going to make it in spite of them, really, aren't you, in some respects. So he says, the more niches you can appeal to and make it easy to access your product on their terms, the wider your audience. And that makes perfect sense.
Absolutely.
And that's the whole point of the episode, really, isn't it? Really just get you to think about, is your demographic important to think about? Mm. Is it something that you've not really even perhaps touched on or looked at? Who is listening? And, you know, if you haven't, perhaps it might be worth exploring if you want to. You don't have to. But, yeah, just have a look at, you know, other ways into finding a greater audience and sharing the people's work. Other people's work who you also are really into. I think it's all about creating that community.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a good point, actually, that it shouldn't all be a one-way street. You know, if you're there, and you see it so often with people, you know, recommending each other's work, and it's great, because that's the whole way that it builds up. If you start sharing the work that you're interested in, and then when you bring yours out that's possibly in a similar kind of vein, then you've already made those relationships, and people might be more, you know, keen to listen to what you've got to offer as well.
I just think things like, you know, it's just getting on all those different social media sites and utilizing those as best as will fit your potential audience. And I think Patreon as well is another way of encouraging people to be able to impact on your programme. And we're very grateful to Patreon supporters for this show.
Yes.
Of whom there are 28. That's very exciting. Thank each and every one of you.
Thank you so much. It makes a big difference.
All you contribute.
And keeps the show going. And to anyone, if you would like to support this podcast, you can go to www.patreon.com/yapaudio.
And I guess there needs to be some incentive for that, doesn't there? So I don't know, maybe I promise that I won't use my Scottish accent for at least another 2 episodes if you're able to contribute.
Yes, and...
What will you offer, Fiona?
Well,
what's your offer?
I promise not to fritter it all away on champagne.
But yeah, we've got so many exciting things coming up, haven't we?
We have an interview with Stevie K. Farnaby, who you might know from Broken Sea Audio Productions, who has worked very much with experimental audio, and he's going to be talking about the BBC Radiophonic Workshop as well. Mm-hmm. We also have a chat with the Wooden Overcoats team on the business side of podcasting coming up.
And Edward Morris, who's a BBC and ex-BBC comedy producer, we'll be talking to him, as well as a plethora of talented ladies who work in audio drama. Is there a word for a plethora of females working in audio? There should be. Can we make one up?
Obviously, write in if you can think of a better one.
Write in and tell us. We've got such amazing talents as Lauren Shippen, mm-hmm. Laura Bramblett, Kirsty Relinky, Sarah Brzezinski, and Emma Sherjarko. So there's lots of amazing people who are hopefully going to excite your ears with all their amazing information in the next few episodes.
Okay, so we're coming towards the end of the show now, but before we go, we do have to mention to you something very exciting. The Audio Drama Production Podcast has joined the Podcast Host family. ThePodcastHost.com is one of the top resources on the internet for podcast equipment reviews and how-to guides. Other podcasts in the network include Podcraft, Mountain Bikes Apart, and UK Business Startup. Matthew McLean, if you remember him, I don't know, is the company's head of audio production, while our friend Robert Cadmore was the content manager before he started his teacher training.
Yes, so what does this mean for you as a listener? Well, we thought this was a good fit because the Podcast Host is creating a lot of written resources around the making of audio drama and fiction podcasting. So they're also running a Fiction Podcast of the Week segment, which aims to showcase a particular production. This helps the show to find more listeners and helps listeners to find new podcasts to subscribe to. So what's not to like? They also do lots of equipment reviews, looking at mics and mixers, preamps and, well, a whole lot more.
So each episode, we're basically going to point you in the direction of something we think will be helpful to you and your own audio drama endeavours. This week, we're going to start with an article by Matthew called 8 Things I Learnt Recording in a Pro Studio, where he talks about recording of Cargo for 11th Hour Productions and World Audio Drama Day. He includes in this a full checklist of what to look out for in a studio visit and all the things you should prepare for yourself and your actors to make the most of your time there. It is absolutely vital reading for anyone wanting to use a professional studio for their audio drama production. So do go and have a look.
Yes, you can find that article at thepodcasthost.com/studio or through the episode show notes at audiodramaproduction.com. Well, thank you very much for listening. We've had a lovely time. I hope you do too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.